Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Trying to get by Benning. Darnell Nurse left it in the corner. Gets up center. Perry scores! Corey Perry!
Well, you're able to shake away from Solani. It's given away to Solani. Around the front.
Okay, all right. I think we're live.
It's happening.
what a fun way to start the show. Right. Yeah. The intro was breaking my internet completely. So, just gonna skip that.
Well, I mean, there's so much energy from off the floor on the board that it could literally just fry any laptop, desktop. It doesn't matter.
Every time Paul Kariya put the puck past
the Broder.
Past Broder, it was just completely frying my internet, and that was it. That was that. It wasn't happening. So, but we made it. We fixed it. We're live. I think everybody's still here. what a broken show. But hey, you know what? Yeah. We made it.
It not started.
Not post game. Yeah. But we're still technically post game. Ducks. we're covering the Ducks series against the Wild. which we won't spend too much time on because it was not a fun one. You know, like, they weren't bad losses. That's the thing. You know, they were close games, one goal games, 2-1 loss and a 3-2 loss today. They came close in both of them, but they were boring games, to say the least, right? Like, they were typical games of what we were used to seeing from the Ducks early on in this season, where we kind of made that shift to, I think you brought it up in our kind of group chat earlier today, that the Ducks should just go tire fire and just play a full-out offense. For a while, we saw that, where they were just kind of, you know, foregoing defense and scoring a bunch of goals. And now we're back to the tight, nitty-gritty games with John Gibson out of the lineup.
I've kind of delegated myself to that, being that fan that's just, all right, it's not going to be a very entertaining game, but I'm not going to invest myself emotionally in most of these games. So if I'm not all that emotionally invested in the outcome, I'd at least like to watch a good hockey game. So if the Ducks can actually just do something, just something where they just throw the kitchen sink at the other goalie and just go for broke, because trying to play a defensive style of game, either with Ryan Miller or Gibson at this point of the season, doesn't seem to really be working. I mean, it limits their chances, but we can't seem to score more than 3 or 4 goals at a time anyway. So why not just go full force and just see where the chips fall? And then hopefully our goalies just bail us out, because they've been doing that in 1-0 games. And that's about the only time we can win these one goal games. We've won 7 of them. And I think 3 of them have been 1-0 shutouts. So about half of them have been 1-0 shutouts. So I'm just over it. Just like, all right, well, I'm ready for the next round. Let's just find something new to do.
You know, it's a remedy for not scoring goals: dressing only 11 forwards. Didn't you know? That seems to be the fix. And you know what? To be fair, I know why they're doing it. Josh Manson is coming back from injury. The only times the Ducks have played 11 forward and 7D this year is while they're trying to ease Josh Manson back into the lineup. My only question and concern with that is, if you have to ease him back in the lineup, which means
why put him in the lineup?
Yeah, why put him in the lineup? If you're going to dress down to 11 forwards in a team that's 30th in goals per game, you're hampering yourself already. To ease him back in the lineup, you're not competitive. You've won 9 games this year. Keep him out of the lineup until he's 100% ready to go. And then all of a sudden tonight, the Ducks are hit with a few defensemen going on COVID protocol list. So they're forced. I don't know if he was ready. I don't know if those guys didn't go on protocol, if they would have played 7 defensemen again. We don't know. But he's kind of forced to come in and play in a 6 defenseman role tonight, because Andy Belinsky was the other guy who played, and the goals were also playing tonight. So there was really only so many guys that you could have up, plus still having enough guys on the taxi squad, right? So it was kind of a situation where he was forced to be a member of a 6-man crew tonight. But
thank God they sheltered him so much in that first game. He was actually good enough this game to get a primary assist on Derek Grant's goal. I mean, otherwise he's so frail, you have to put 7 defensemen out there just to make sure he doesn't hurt himself or, you know, get overworked. I don't like that mentality of, we're easing him in, so we need to have was one other guy. It's like, this dude knows how to play, and either he's ready or he's not. Don't sit there and take out a forward because we might need someone to back up this guy because he may not be all the way ready. Well, if he's not all the way ready, don't put him out there. It's not like all of a sudden he's going to come out there and you put a 7 defenseman out there and all of a sudden we become this defensive juggernaut that just shuts down the other team and all we need is another 1-goal win. I don't like it. It didn't make any sense to me. And, even this game, he got an assist. He was running around. He was doing fine. He was doing his thing. So what's the big difference between last game and this game?
Yeah, the only thing I really even want to talk about on that last game is not only the 7 defensemen, 11 forwards, is the fact that Comtois was scratched and Danton Heinen scratched again, which isn't surprising this year. And we get to see probably the weirdest line we've seen in the last couple of years, which was Derek Grant on the left wing of Ryan Getzlaff and then Nick DeLore on the right wing. And that was the third line for the Ducks, because Silverberg and Steele were essentially spare forwards. That's kind of the way they operated in that game. It was almost like the Ducks were rolling three lines with two spare forwards, and then they were just throwing a bunch of different combinations out. I think if you go back and watch that game, there was probably, you know, anywhere from 9 to 10 to 11 different line combinations that we saw throughout the night. It was just, yeah, it was just a weird setup, and it showed. I mean, the Ducks played a good game defensively. They, you know, they didn't allow too many opportunities, but the Wild aren't really a dynamic offensive team to begin with. You know, they've had their spurts this year where they've blown up for a few goals, but their power play has been a struggle and has been league worst all year. Somehow their power play with guys like Kirill Kaprizov and Kevin Fiala is worse than the Ducks power play is, but you know, they're good at winning one goal games just as much as the Ducks are, and they end up scraping by in that one. John Gibson sat out again because he's listed as day-to-day now with a lower body injury. I believe he's been put on the IR since. And Sam Steele drew back into that game after four games out with a scratch. And then we get the COVID protocol stuff. So Heinen, Hutton, Larson, and Stolarz all kind of out for this game tonight because they're added to the COVID-19 protocol list. And we see a big kind of shift in a lot of lines. Comtois comes back in, plays with Lindstrom and Raquel. Getzlaf plays with Grant and Jones this time. Steele plays with Delorier and Silverberg. And then the only line that survived for good reason has been Trevor Zegras, Adam Henrique, and Troy Terry. And it's weird to say that Henrique is kind of a passenger on that line. But if we've seen, you know, high-level chemistry from any players this year, I think it's, you know, the easiest one to say right now has been Trevor Zegras and Troy Terry. They just seem to click ever since they were put together, which is great to see. I mean, Troy Terry has taken some massive steps over the last couple of games, and it's not all from being put with Trevor Zegras, but you can tell there's some chemistry there and some understanding of how they both want to play the game, and they look great every time they're on the ice.
Yeah, I mean, that's one positive you can pretty much take away from this, but you know, and even I would say Henrique has kind of found a home on that line. Like, I mean, it's just kind of worked out between the three of them how they're at least going to be relied upon moving forward to try and produce some sort of offense. I mean, they sat Comtois the first game of the series. He finally got in and actually got a goal today. But I mean, they're starved for goals or offense or chances or anyone to just finish plays, and it seems like at least those guys have some sort of chemistry. So it's good. We got a line, because once you start throwing Delorier and Getzlaf on a line, you're literally just crapping in your hand, throwing it at the wall and seeing what sticks, and then go like, okay, we'll go with that.
Thank God we have Jamie Drysdale though in the lineup, because these defense pairings would have been pretty scary without him in the lineup, because it was Fowler and Hackenpaw, which we've seen for most of the year.
And I've been really disappointed with Hackenpaw recently. Just
yeah, as that pairing together has been really, like, I think when they were first put together, I put out an article, and it was like, I think after the first week or two they were together, and they actually looked good.
They were nailing it.
They had good numbers.
I was really impressed with him, but yeah.
Yeah, because he got forced into the lineup due to some injuries and kind of took that position and ran with it. And then now I think a lot of their play and the Ducks play has caught up to them. And they've now, with Lindholm out of the lineup, have kind of taken on the responsibility of being the top pairing for the Ducks. And I think that's kind of beyond their capabilities.
Yeah,
especially Johnny Hawken. But it's not fair for a guy who is really a sixth or seventh defenseman to be said, okay, you're our number two guy right now. Yeah. You're going to be playing, you know, anywhere from 18 to 20 minutes a night, which I think is, you know, anywhere, you know, 3 to 4 minutes more than Hakimo should be playing, especially when you think, you know, he's on the penalty kill and he's playing a shutdown role and they're putting him out there in key faceoffs. And you know, he's had a few own goals go into the back of the net lately and some, you know, blown assignments.
I think he scored more goals against us than for us.
Yeah.
Off the sticks or body parts or whatever.
they're not his fault, but his play as a whole, it hasn't looked great. Andy Walensky drew in for this game to play with Kevin Shattenkirk, and that pairing struggled. And then Jamie Drysdale got a new assignment. He's been with Ben Hutton since getting his NHL debut, and obviously with Hutton out on the COVID protocol list, it was Drysdale with Manson tonight. And again, Jamie Drysdale just looks great every time he plays. And it's really hard, even without the points there, to justify why he should get sent back right now. And I think the team is recognizing that. As much as we want to criticize their usage of Trevor Zegras on key situations and the fact that, you know, they bench him every now and then in tough situations in the game. You know, the last a minute and a half, 2 minutes of the game when the Ducks had the net pulled, Jamie Drysdale was out there with Kevin Shattenkirk on a 6-on-5. And that kind of shows you the confidence they have on this kid to generate plays offensively. Trevor Zegras wasn't out there. I believe he gets like not at all.
Raquel and even Max Jones was out there for part of it. And that kind of bothers me a little bit, because if you're the Ducks and you're looking for that offensive spark, is there anybody other than, I would maybe say, Raquel or Getzlaf that you think could really spark an offensive goal, like just something that just no one's expecting is going to happen, and we need that goal, and this guy's going to do it? I would throw Zegras up there as a top three in my pick to put out there. The fact they didn't do it early on, and then there was an icing, they came back and they still didn't put him on, threw me off. But they kept Drysdale out there the whole time. Now, I get Drysdale from a defensive standpoint can probably create a little bit of offense, a misdirection, but I don't know. I mean, what's your opinion? Because I really thought, like, Drysdale being out there, at some point you might have seen Zegras, but for the last 2.5 minutes you didn't see him. He wasn't out there.
Yeah, it is surprising because you would think at some point he would get out there. And in the game prior, the big talking point at the end of the game is the Ducks had a power play to end that game, and Derek Grant found himself out there, and Trevor Zegras didn't. And Jamie Drysdale also didn't find himself out there on that that game-ending power play either. So there's something to be said there. But it is a bit interesting, the contrast of how they've handled the tough situations for these players in the key situations. It seems like
Drysdale do it, but they won't let Zegras do it. And yeah, I don't know why.
And you know, maybe some of it is like the fact that, you know, they have Yanni Hakanpää, Ben Hutton, and Jacob Larson as defensemen on this team who, you know, despite Drysdale's age and his inexperience in the NHL, you just can't knock his skill and his ability over guys like that. Whereas with Trevor Zegras, you've got guys who've been there and done that, and been there and done that with the Ducks. You know, we've got Silverberg and Jones and Terry and Steele and Henrique and Getzlaf, and, you know, the list goes on there. Comtois and Raquel, and guys that you can kind of put in front of him in those situations. It's not so much that I agree with that, but I think that's the difference there, is you have that many guys in front of Trevor Zegras. And clearly Derek Grant is a guy that Dallas Eakins loves. And is trusting in those situations despite not producing. But that's what you have in front of Trevor Zegras. Whereas with Jamie Drysdale, you know, right now it's Fowler, Shattenkirk, and him. So he's going to find some time, out in the power play.
Technically a top three defenseman offensively for the Ducks.
Yeah, and you know, there have been times where he's been used in key situations over Kevin Shattenkirk, because Kevin Shattenkirk hasn't produced, I think, at the level they've wanted from him. And Shattenkirk was supposed to be that guy for the Ducks this year, and it's unbelievable. That Drysdale has been able to come in and look as comfortable as he has been. Like, that's the thing for me, is the offense was going to be there, but, you know, as an 18-year-old to step in on a bad team and really not make any mistakes through your first four games. You know, the skating ability is on display, the quick decision making, the smart plays that he makes, you know, game in and game out, his ability to transition the puck up the ice. Like, everything has kind of been on full display. And I don't think I've really, you know, looked at Drysdale when he's on the ice and been like, wow, that was a rookie player right there. That was a rookie mistake.
Yeah, you can't tell he's out of place. Like, He at least looks in place, and that's enough for, you know, an 18, 19-year-old kid to go in and be able to do that. Did the Ducks even get a power play this game?
I don't think so. They did. No, I don't
think they could have totally used a Tim Peel then.
I knew that was going to come up.
I feel like that might have just helped that team out just a wee bit if we could have gotten a Tim Peel power play.
Power plays are kind of must-see TV for Ducks fans right now, just because Drysdale and Zegras make them actually fun to watch. Even if you're not scoring, The creativity.
And the best part was the fact that it was like a national broadcast, and they got like, oh, Minnesota is so bad on the power play. Oh, they scored a power play goal. It was like, oh, good. It's not just John Oller saying it. It's whoever says it. It's just whoever needs a first goal. It was Suter the first game. I think that was his first goal of the season. And then it's like, oh, this power play is ranked worse than the league. They just, oh, look, they scored.
Yeah.
All right, cool. And both they just need the Ducks. That's all they
two
need.
Two of the three goals were identical plays, a shot from Suter and a tip from Spurgeon, defenseman to defenseman.
It is only a second and third goal of the season, so, you know, it wasn't the first, so we lucked out there, but
we have to talk about, if we're going to talk about any goal, we have to talk about the Nico Sturm goal and the Ryan Miller bobble. Now, I'm not going to get on Ryan Miller here and criticize him too much because this happens. What?
You're not like every other Ducks fan I've ever heard on online. He's the reason we're losing. Gibson's the reason we're losing. Goaltending blows.
You know, like,
because I don't understand it.
Yeah, despite that goal, like, you can't blame the first two on Miller. They're tips really in the prime scoring area, right in the slot. And the second one has like a nasty just drop off to it and bounces off the ice and past him.
He doesn't even react until it's past him. He's like, I don't see it, but everyone's looking at my way, so I'm just going to drop. So he just drops. He literally never saw that puck. He just went in. He's just like, I dropped. Did I get it? And then he's just seeing Minnesota guys cheer. He goes, fuck, I missed it. But that third one blows. That one sucks, and it hurts, and it hurts from a goalie perspective. It just sucks, and he almost had it. He put his glove down, and it just hit off the tip, and it bounced, and it just happened to be right to where the other guy was just running towards, and you're screwed, because at that point, you know, he's flat out angel, just, I got this, and he doesn't, and it blows, and he was pissed, and he's shaking his head, and every goalie's been there, whether it's first time you ever played goalie, you played a couple seasons, you played beer league, you played minor league, you played semi-professional, you played professional, you played top league, you played the all-star game. That happens. It happens at some point and it blows. It's just not fun. And it sucks that it's the game winner on top of it, especially for Ryan Miller. It's just one of those things. He thought he had it, hit the tip of the glove, jumps right to the other guy, and you're just screwed.
Yeah, it's one of those plays, like we said, right? It's tough.
It never goes for the Ducks. It always goes against the Ducks.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, whether that was Miller or Dostal who backed up tonight or Gibson, you know, it happens. It happens to everybody. So, the real kind of big thing about that is it was a game-winning goal. And that's what sucks about it is at the end of the day, the Ducks actually played a decent game in this one. And you know, they were full value for walking away with 2 points potentially. And it kind of comes down to a play like that. But we got to get to the trade here that happened tonight because we finally got the details of what the Ducks are giving up here. I'll toot my own horn a little bit because when Pat and I were talking before the show tonight, I speculated that it could be Antoine Morin who was going back to the Tampa Bay Lightning in return. They love their French Canadians over in Tampa. And I originally walked back on that because Antoine Morin is in action for the San Diego Gulls tonight. But, you know, in hockey's a business. It doesn't matter. So the Ducks end up getting Alexander Volkov, 23-year-old Russian winger, from the Tampa Bay Lightning in exchange for Antoine Morand and a conditional 2023 seventh rounder. I'm like, what? That part of it, like, I want to know what the condition is on that. Like a 2023 seventh rounder. It's a couple years out and it's a seventh round pick. I don't even know why you're throwing it in at that point. But, you know, it's an interesting deal here because Antoine Morand is firmly a San Diego Gulls player. Yeah, he's waiver exempt. He's been playing in San Diego all year. He really hasn't made any progress since he was a second round pick for the Ducks. I mean, you look at the fact that Maxim Comtois came after him in that draft and look what he's doing in the NHL right now. And Morand hasn't really gotten things going at the AHL level. So I'm not really upset too much with the return there. There was speculation earlier that it could be a mid round pick and it was just loosely said it was a prospect for the Ducks. At the end of the day, you know, Volkov is going to play for the Ducks in the NHL. He's not waiver exempt unless they want to bury him in San Diego. He's been playing 19 games with the Lightning this year. he seems like a guy that the Ducks are at least going to give a shot. And it kind of seems to be what Murray was looking for. When we saw kind of all the reports lately, is he was looking for, you know, a player around 23, 24, 25 that needed kind of a change of scenery, that could come in and make a difference potentially with the team. So this is a, you know, as prototypical of a Bob Murray deal, I think you can get.
I have no idea who he is.
I think most people didn't, right? Like,
you're saying all these things. He's gonna play. He's gonna prototypical Bob Murray move. Literally, if you asked me if he's a defenseman or a forward, I couldn't tell you. I don't know. So, is he a forward or is he a defenseman?
So he's a winger. He's been playing in the AHL for the last couple seasons and has made his breakthrough.
What is he good at? Is he good at scoring? Is he good at setting up? What's his MO?
If you ask most people right now, he's not really good at anything. I think that's the big thing. All
right, then that is a Bob Murray play. Yeah. All right, I agree with it there.
It's not that he's bad. He's just not, you know,
he's not blowing you away. So if he ever shows up on the Ducks roster, he might at best break the third line at an extreme best.
Yeah. Now, is he, you know, potentially an upgrade on some of the fourth liners that they have? Is he an upgrade on Derek Grant? Potentially. I mean, it all depends. You have to also kind of think that he's buried down in a very, very deep Tampa Bay lineup where potentially, like, he could come here, former second round pick, and get some chances to play in the top six, play, you know, 15, 16, 17 minutes a night. And who knows at that point, right? There was at some point Stevie Y drafted him in the second round and saw some promise there.
Second round draft pick?
He was a second round pick. Yeah. He was originally a second round pick. So, you know, there was at some point somebody saw something in him to draft him that high. Now, you know, I'll be full disclosure here. This trade happened less than an hour ago. So I haven't done my full due diligence to kind of look into all the details on Volkov and kind of what his role was in Tampa and what's went wrong there. But
so it sounds like ultra minor league trade, and Bob Murray is trying to look like he's doing something.
Yeah, essentially. And, you know, some people were kind of sitting here saying this could be, you know, the domino effect here where guys start getting moved. Because if Volkov is coming in and taking an NHL roster spot, if this isn't an AHL trade where, you know, Moran comes out and Volkov goes to San Diego, even though he's not waiver exempt, you just keep him there all year. That could possibly be what this deal is, and it doesn't affect the Ducks whatsoever. But if he comes on to the roster, somebody has to make way, right? Because it's not like you sent a roster player back to Tampa Bay. You've been scratching Danton Heinen. You had a few players go onto the COVID protocol list, but they'll come back off soon enough. And, you know, the only other guys out of the lineup forward wise that are kind of long term injuries, and Carter Brownie's done for the season, and Sonny Milano's done for the foreseeable future. So Volkov coming in, that means some guys have to kind of sit out for a while here. And we've heard the rumors that Danton Heinen's on the trade block, that Rickard Rakell's on the trade block, Troy Terry's on the trade block, and we're, 17, 18 days away from the trade deadline right now, and we've talked about the kind of quarantine deadline for a lot of these moves, and it could push it up a little bit here, that this could be the domino effect here, where Volkov coming in means somebody's going out, and then we start to see a lot more trades happen.
No, this feels like Bob Murray's just like, all right, well, we'll make this move because we had a lot of guys go on a protocol, or we just need to fill a spot, or, you know, someone might be a little bit more. I literally have no idea why this trade's even happening, but be interested to see what that conditional seventh round pick is, whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, I mean, that really means nothing. You know, yeah, you can find players in the seventh round. The Ducks found Andre Kasha in the second round. But, you know, when this deal got announced and the only thing we heard was it was Volkov coming back to the Ducks, it was, as long as it's not, you know, a fourth or a fifth round pick or a prospect who you just drafted is still fairly young, then it's not a win. It's not a win, but it's a move that, you know, sure, you could make it to see what this guy could do. There's never, I never have an issue with taking a guy who's, you know, 22, 23, was originally a high draft pick, is still kind of adjusting potentially to the North American game. There's potential there that maybe you can unearth something, not a, you know, a gem, like a franchise player, but a guy who can actually be an impactful young player on your roster. So there, you know, it is a good move from the Ducks in that sense, where you're getting a, you know, 23-year-old roster player, was a former second round pick in 2017. The one of the best drafting teams in the league saw some promise in him, and he just isn't getting those types of opportunities in the NHL with one of the best teams in the league right now. And you think he'll come over to Anaheim, he'll be given opportunities to play up in the lineup, and you're not giving up something that's going to really hurt you down the road. Like Antoine Morin, he was a second round pick for the Ducks. It's essentially one failed second round pick for another. But the difference with Volkov is he's a little bit further along than Antoine Morin is right now. And I think the Lightning feel comfortable in some of the players that they've drafted in the past that they can kind of shape Morin potentially into an NHL player down the road. So it's not an awful deal. I think it's one that makes sense for both teams, but it's not the one that we're waiting for, right? It's not the rebuild signaling deal or the deal that brings in a first round pick or a top young prospect. It's just one of those moves in a long line of one of those moves, right? By Bob Murray.
Well, here's my theory, is that the guy we got is Russian and Bob Murray hates Russians. So I feel like Bob Murray got him and he's going to do the Cave of Wonders where he gets that guy and says, you will never see the light of day, and then buries him. And then he'll never play again in the NHL, and Bob Murray will go off and do something else. Literally, I think this is nothing. Nothing
Shane,
is going to happen
Shane
from this.
Shane put in the chat that said, I'll give you this nobody for that nobody.
He was obviously not worthy. I have no idea. I mean, they're going to trade 2 second-round guys that are both way underproducing, and Bob Murray is going to bring on a Russian that's all of a sudden going to like crack the lineup? Hell no. That is there. I have no idea why.
Volkov is a restricted free agent at the end of this season. The underlying numbers say that he's a better finisher than he's given credit for. Has 3 goals and 2 assists for 5 points in 19 games with the Lightning this year.
5 whole points in 19 games.
But you know what? Like, if the Ducks are looking for finishers, goal scorers at any level, right? It's, again, I keep coming back to, it's not the worst trade to bring in a depth player who can score. Where
but
we've
it's
got,
not going to crack the lineup.
But he could, right? There's
but he
potential.
Won't. if a million people get, if the whole team gets injured or, you know, or sick or something like that, then yeah, he might crack the third line. And then maybe he gets a chance at that awesome finishing skill that's got him. What was it? 3 goals in 19 games?
Yeah, 3 goals.
Sorry. Call me pessimistic. I just don't see him really cracking the lineup and being impactful. So
No, I definitely don't. You know, the odds are stacked against him to be an impactful player on this roster. But when you think of what you gave up for the potential to get an NHL quality player, it's not a lot. You know, Morin, as I think Dave put in the chat here, Morin and Volkov were taken both in 2017. Volkov went 48th overall. Morin went 60th overall. So essentially you're just swapping two, I don't want to say failed, but yeah, failed second round picks for each other in hopes that one of them will excel better in your system versus the other. So we'll see, you know, how this pans out. Volkov might be in the lineup Friday against the St. Louis Blues, and we'll get to kind of get our first look on him and make our own opinions there, because as I said, you know, a couple minutes ago, this trade happened less than an hour ago. I haven't watched Volkov at all this year. I like many
now,
people
just
have.
Give us an exact estimation of exactly how many goals he's going to score for the Ducks. And if you're wrong, we will berate you mercilessly.
If he doesn't get a hat trick in his debut on Friday, it's a failed, failed deal.
Pretty much. Like, Sonny Milano was a bigger plus than he was.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. It's one of those deals. Again, it doesn't move the needle. The Ducks make these types of deals pretty much every year. The only reason I think it's so, you know, at kind of the top of mind right now, this is the first deal the Ducks have made all year. A mid kind of rumors that they're going to make big deals. So it gets the blood flowing a little bit that you're hoping some of these big deals come to fruition here. And that kind of brings us to our next topic where we talk about some of these trades here. So Pierre LeBrun. Yeah, that's right. I don't know why I was getting him and Elliot Friedman mixed up. But yeah, Pierre LeBrun put out an article where he talked to Bob Murray, got some more quotes on kind of what Bob Murray is planning on doing this year. None of it is really new information. It's not anything we haven't heard before. Basically, Murray saying that he's, you know, looking to get some younger players. He likes what he's seen from some of the young guys. So you can kind of speculate that that's Troy Terry and Maxim Comtois and Max Jones. And he's liked what he's seen from them, and that, you know, trading a few veterans between now and puck drop next season is something that is likely going to happen and something that he's trying to do. And that ties in with the rumors that we've heard that, you know, he's listened to offers on Rickard Rakell. He tried to move Adam Henrique and is still trying to. He's looking, you know, he listened to offers, if any, on Jakob Silfverberg. And the list kind of goes on there in terms of the several players that he's willing to move. And basically, he kind of summed everything up with it's just quiet right now. Yeah, and that's what we've kind of heard, is the Ducks are the only, or at least the most active team of everybody in the NHL in terms of looking for trades. But nobody's really working to give up a bunch to make those trades right now because of, you know, the pandemic and the flat cap and the expansion draft this offseason. There's so many working parts that go into making a deal this year, just like it was when Vegas came into the league, that it's so hard to kind of push these deals over the line and try and get the price you want for you know, whether it be Rickard Rakell or Adam Henrique or whoever.
Yeah, and also in that, you know, article too is you know, they're, you know, this is the odd thing where it's like most of the time GMs are looking for hockey trades versus rentals. And like this year round, they're looking for rentals. And the Ducks don't really have a lot of rentals. They have a lot of good guys.
Ben
Hutton. Good. Yeah, I know. Exactly. There's not good ones. Like all of them have multiple years. Some of them are on good contracts. So that actually makes them, like a Rakell, makes them more appeasing to maybe try and make a move there. But these guys haven't produced in the last season. They're not producing this season. And, you know, GMs get a little wary of like, well, what's going to happen? You know, is this guy waiver, you know, exempt, or am I going to have to protect him come the expansion draft? Everyone's just kind of holding tight. And especially, you know, if they've got to go to a Canadian team, there's a 2-week quarantine where you can make that trade. You won't see that guy play for you for 2 weeks. So it's like, why make that trade now? Let's maybe wait, see how this all plays out. So the Ducks are kind of in a crappy position as a seller because there's not a whole lot of buyers. Everyone's just a little hesitant, especially this time around. But, you know, you'd kind of hope the Ducks can find some sort of dance partner. And then I think if they're, you know, showing that they can go with the Tampa Bay stuff, maybe somewhere in there there's another trade, someone goes like, all right, well, they seem to be the only one willing to make things move around, and let's see what we can get. But the Ducks are kind of screwed. The funnier part, I don't want to say funny, but the odd part to me is I don't think Bob Murray really believes he's going to be the GM after this year, but he's acting like he is. Now, I don't know if that's just a professional thing or a common courtesy, like, hey, I'm going to play this out like I'm playing next season. But, I mean, does anyone really think he's going to be GM? I mean, I think he's going to be GM for the rest of the year just to get through the craziness that's about to happen.
Yeah.
But does anyone really think, and that would be my question, Bob Murray, do you really think you're going to be here at the start of next season? Because I don't think you are.
Yeah, or at least not in the general manager position. I mean, he'll get that nice cushy promotion
to consultant,
vice president of hockey operations, which is essentially just a title at that point. But yeah, it's such a unique year and kind of a shitty year to be a seller, right? And it, as active as a seller as the Ducks are presumably being reported that they are. When you think of, you know, it's a pandemic, so it's already kind of tough in a shortened season, and you've got a flat cap where it didn't increase, so teams that were already up against the cap are way up against the cap this year and trying to add anybody in, And then the expansion draft is that whole separate wrinkle where any team that gets Rickard Rakell right now is going to be a team that would likely have to protect him or want to protect him, right? You're bringing him in as a guy that you want for this year and next year if you're trading a lot of assets for him. And that's what the Ducks would want in terms of value, is saying, hey, you're getting this guy not only for this year, but next year at a nice cap hit. That team that ends up bringing him in has to make sure they have enough room to protect him and not lose another forward that they want to keep hold of. And for the very competitive teams in this league, that's hard to be able to make that happen and say, Rickard Rakell is going to jump in as the seventh or, sixth or seventh forward that we want to protect. And we're okay with that because we're not going to lose somebody else that's going to be valuable to our roster. That takes a lot of potential suitors off the table there, where maybe in a regular year, you've got 8 or 9, maybe 10 teams interested in Rickard Rakell, like very interested in actively pursuing him. Whereas this year, maybe that number goes down to 3, 4, 5. And that seems to be, when we look at the reported teams interested in him, seems to be the case. There's really 4 teams kind of aggressively pursuing Rickard Rakell. Toronto's one of them. The Islanders are reportedly another. Philadelphia has joined that discussion. So, there are teams that are near the top of their division, have a little bit of wiggle room to work with, will be able to protect him in the expansion draft and not lose another player. But when you're only working with kind of a small handful of teams there, it's a little bit harder to kind of get what you want. And the price reportedly is fairly high in Rickard Rakell. And credit to Bob Murray for not coming down on that. But you're getting down to the wire here in terms of being able to, move him for the price you want. And, how long are teams going to stick around, especially teams like Toronto, who have to deal with the quarantine situation? How long are they going to wait before, they move on to another target, and then all of a sudden you've got one less team interest in Rickard Rakell?
Yeah, and on top of that is, like, most of the teams, too, like, they've got to have a good prospect pool for the Ducks to even kind of be interested in moving, because I don't think you're going to get a ton of draft picks. You'll probably get, a decent draft pick, but you also want a decent prospect. And how many of those teams at the upper echelon are going to really have that depth to give to the Ducks to make them that much better in the upcoming season? Because the Ducks are kind of at that point where they're going to they're going to trade a Rakell to get somebody who's going to be good in 2 to 3 years to move in with the new core, I guess, or the new wave of Ducks. So it's like there's not too many, like, if you start looking at Philly and their depth chart and everything like that, it's like a lot of them don't necessarily fit what the Ducks are maybe looking for. So once again, it becomes, there's a little bit less for the Ducks to be happy about being sellers. And then the other season, you might get more draft picks or you might get more prospects, but now everyone's got to be worried about, well, if I get him and I'm giving all that stuff up, am I going to just lose this guy? He should be a hockey play, a hockey trade, but because they have to protect him, now it becomes like, well, he's either going to be a rental for the expansion team, or he's going to be, someone I've got to invest in and make sure I'm moving out somebody else who I don't care that much about. So,
yeah. And one of the comments from that LeBrun article that Murray was saying, he can't just move guys for all draft picks. He's got to start getting some younger prospects, which I, for once, I actually agree with.
100%.
Now, it all depends on what he means there, because we've seen comments saying that he's looking for guys in the 24 to 27 range. And for me, that takes you out of the younger prospect range and more into a roster player range. And if you're moving Rickard Rakell for a player in that 24 to 27 range, depending on who it is, you're almost, again, trading a Rickard Rakell for a Rickard Rakell. Because usually a player who is at, around 24 to 27, kind of, we already know what they're going to be and who they are as a player. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Rickard Rakell is getting you a better player than he is unless you're adding to that deal, right? So that's kind of the thing for me. I think if he's looking at, we talk about Philly, a Cam York type player, where you look at some of their top prospects there. If you're the Islanders, and I doubt you're getting Bellows or Wahlstrom from them because they're both playing this year. But if you could pry away one of their top prospects not in the NHL right now, and same with Toronto, if you look at Robertson or Amirov. I think that's the path you have to go, because outside of getting another first round pick, you know, a second round pick this year and next year for the Ducks isn't as valuable as maybe taking, you know, a 21, 22, 23 year old prospect and trying to get them into the lineup as soon as you can. You know, a 2023 second round pick does nothing for this team, because you got to wait a couple of years for that pick to even happen. And then as a second round pick, you're likely, unless it's, you know, a freak situation, you're likely waiting another 2 to 3 years for that guy to develop and get anywhere close to the NHL. Like, look at the development path of talking about Antoine Morand and Alexander Volkov and Maxime Comtois, and how long it took them to get to the NHL. You look at recent second round picks and how long it's going to take Sam Colangelo and other guys to get to the NHL. The Ducks aren't in a position to start adding, you know, second and third round picks in some of these deals if it means sacrificing those additional picks to get a little bit better of a prospect. You know, first round picks are, I think, the only exception there, because you are kind of a bit closer to getting, you know, guys who are maybe only 1 or 2 years away from the NHL. But I think Bob Murray knows that, you know, the most valuable pick the Ducks are going to have is their own first round pick. You're going to get an exceptional talent at the top end of that draft, and that's what they need. And then if you can supplement that by trading Rickard Rakell or Adam Henrique or Hampus Lindholm, whoever it is,
for a guy really who's good, like maybe about 2 or 3 years ahead of your first round draft pick, so that when they're there, everything works out. No one wins a Stanley Cup and having 26 or under year olds. I mean, you're going to have a veteran leadership in there. And I don't like using the word leadership, but a veteran presence that can also produce. You're going to need those, you know, little bit older guys where you got like your Getzlafs, and then you've got your mid-range guys between 30 and 26. And then you're going to have your young guys that are 25 to 22. And then you're going to have your rookies that are going to be a little bit, you know, 21 and under. I mean, there's going to be a mix of those guys. So for everyone to just kind of go like, oh, we need to get rid of Rakell, get rid of Getzlaf, get rid of Gibson, and get rid of Henrique. We need all new, fresh, young guys. Everyone just come in because it's a young man's thing. It's like it never works that way. You're going to have those guys in there. So if we're getting rid of a Rakell, it's got to be for someone. It can't be for multiple draft picks. And then all we're doing is just stacking draft picks. And eventually those draft picks will all be 23, and then we got a bunch of 23-year-olds and go like, all right, go win.
It's not even this that. It's just the how long it takes for that, for those guys to get to a point where they're ready to make the NHL roster, and the uncertainty of that happening. I think the only way you can say you would ever want just draft pick upon draft pick upon draft pick is at the beginning of your rebuild. That's what you're looking for. Yeah. At the beginning of your rebuild, when you're looking to acquire as many pieces and as many, you know, darts to throw at the dartboard as you can, and you've got a longer time period to do so, I think that's when you look at that. And I think the Ducks are slowly kind of starting to get out of that, because, you know, hopefully the development path for Zegras and Drysdale means, you know, they finish the season in the NHL this year, they take some big steps forward next year as second year players and really start looking like key players in the NHL lineup. And if they are the quality of the players we think they are, that development path and that progress will be a lot quicker than the likes of Sam Steele and Maxime Comtois and Troy Terry, where the development path has been a bit slower to really producing at the NHL level. You know, you would expect Zegras and Drysdale to take some bigger leaps forward than those guys would. So then you have to start supplementing those guys. I think you've got, you know, the draft picks you've just made that can add to that. Eventually, you've got Gruen in San Diego. You've got Perreault, who you just drafted. You've got Colangelo. You've got Henry Thrun down in the minors as well. You've got Ian Moore and Jackson Lacombe, who are playing good. You've got all these guys who are now 19, 20, 21 that are going to start moving their way into the Ducks lineup. And, you know, going out and getting three more second-round picks, as good as that is for the rebuild, like I said, you're not seeing these guys for 4 or 5 years. And you're risking them maybe not being NHL ready. And if you can say, instead of those second round picks or whatever, you can go out and get, you know, a 20-year-old, a 21-year-old prospect who is further along in that development path that can jump in your roster next year or 2 years from now, instead of 3, 4, or 5 years from now. That's what the Ducks should be looking for right now, is that young prospect in return, especially for your top assets. So again, if you're looking to move Ricard Raquel, the main piece of that deal shouldn't really even be a first round pick. It should be a high, you know, A-level prospect who you know is going to jump into your lineup eventually as a top four defenseman or a top six forward. That's what they should be looking for right now. And it seems like it is, because the price is pretty high in Ricard Raquel.
It's going to be hard to get because everyone's going to want to keep that because that's a person they don't have to protect. Whereas Raquel, when they get him, they have to protect him.
Yeah. And you know, he'll be interesting to see how that, you know, accelerates heading into the deadline, right? Teams get desperate, and we see this all the time. The price goes high.
Keyword, desperation.
Yeah. But it'll be interesting to see how that plays in this year, because we know in regular years, the trade deadline, people will overpay in the last day just to get that guy, to get somebody in. You know, I remember the
Bob Murray's not that guy, though. That's the only thing I'm worried about. It's just like, he's like, eh. I mean, we were really close, and they were giving us a lot, but I just wanted another ninth round pick. They didn't give it to us, so I said no.
I wanted to replace the conditional seventh I gave up.
I just wanted them to retain like $1,000 on that contract, and they said no. So I was like, nah, we're good.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to see how desperate teams get, because, you know, there are names that will likely get moved. I think at some point Taylor Hall gets moved.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy, because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post, so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And there'll be a few other forwards that are kind of, I think Philip Forsberg's on the market. Whether he gets moved or not, we'll have to wait and see. But eventually, Ricard Raquel's name will be at the top of that list as kind of the best option.
Hall's the best option.
But if Hall goes, that's what I'm saying. So if he gets traded, then slowly guys come off the block, and it's like, okay.
Who else? Sorry, Hall's gone. Who the hell is it? Raquel?
So then if you're a team that's, you know, in competition a couple weeks from now, I think teams right now are starting to identify whether they're going to be big time buyers at the deadline. You know, we're getting into that period here where you have to make that decision.
The economy is made up of real people doing real stuff, and it affects everything, which you obviously know since you're a real person doing real stuff. Marketplace is here to help you get smart about everything beyond the what of the day's business and economic news. We dig into the how and the why with the real people driving our economy. From big tech and interest rates to small businesses and what's happening at the Fed, Marketplace breaks it all down so you don't have to. Listen to Marketplace wherever you get your podcasts.
Hall's that big domino. He's the first one. The second that happens, whatever division it happens in, other teams are going to react to that and then try, like, other ones that are in that same area. It's like, oh, God, they got Hall. We got to get somebody because they just added Hall. And I think maybe that price goes up. So,
yeah, like if you're, you know, the Islanders and somebody in your division adds Taylor Hall and you've lost Anders Lee for the entire year.
Yeah.
All of a sudden you're saying, OK, you know what? Ricard Raquel is looking pretty nice and we get him for next year, too. You know, that's and I think that plays into it is, you know, Taylor Hall is the better player. Maybe, you know, points haven't been there this year, but he's on a team that just lost their 15th game in a row. Right. You know, some of that comes into play there.
So close to setting a record, right? I think it's 18. Pittsburgh did it back in like the early 2000s. Buffalo's knocking.
and no Jack Eichel means they'll probably hit it. They're just that bad. But I think like the thing that comes into play here when you're comparing the value of Rickard Rakell and Taylor Hall is, for Taylor Hall right now, whatever team you're trading him to, if you're the Sabres, you've got to eat half that contract. You got to eat 50% of that and bring that down from $8 million to $4 million to make that viable for any team as a rental, right? Or at least, you know, 30% or 40% of that contract. You know, people are going to take a shot on Taylor Hall just because of his track record and what he's done in the past, and you know, chalk that up to the Sabres are awful, so he's bad. But I think the one thing Rickard Rakell has on a lot of the top forwards available in this draft is a pretty decent history of production when the Ducks were good. And that term and the value that he has is, like, we've seen a lot of teams make that shift over the last couple of years to maybe moving away from the rental and getting these guys that have that one extra year, because now you're, instead of one playoff run, you're getting them for two. And I think a lot of teams like that security, you know, in the thinking that so many things can go wrong in one playoff year. And if you're the Lightning, that's like the perfect example, because they got swept by the Columbus Blue Jackets. They went out and got some rentals that year. They lost those rentals for nothing, and it meant nothing because they got swept in just a fluke accident. They got swept by the Blue Jackets. They just did not show up for that series. And what do? They come back next year. They make some really good moves, some long-term moves, and they win the Stanley Cup. Right. And I think that a lot of teams are looking at that and saying, okay, you know what, bringing in a rental versus bringing in a guy with another year, well, you know, if maybe that guy with another year isn't as high profile as that rental, but we know anything can happen in a playoff series. And if something happens this year and we don't go all the way, we know this guy's going to be here next year, and we can take that step forward and kind of make the changes for next year. And we're still just as good of a team, and we gave up maybe a little bit more to secure this guy, but we have him for next year too.
I would say in a normal year is yes, but not in a expansion draft year, because once again, it's like, hey, we get this guy and it's a hockey move because we got the guy for after this year. But you literally have to go like, all right, this year's done. Whether, you know, if you win the cup, great. But if you're that team that didn't win it, now you're like, okay, who are we going to keep? Is it going to be this guy? I mean, he's on a good contract. Then who else are we willing to give up? So you either got to be, you just got to, I guess, calculate it. You got to go like, listen, if we don't win, this guy's on a good contract for the next year. Who's the guy who we're not going to protect? Who's the guy we're going to take out to put this guy's protection? And so, you know, once again, that becomes a little bit of the team, you know, which teams are going to figure that that's worth it to them. And if Rakell is going to be a good enough guy to let somebody else go who might be of equal or just slightly undervalue of Rakell. So it's weird. It's a weird season. Weird off season coming up.
It's a hard one to predict if any of these trades are going to happen, because I think as much as the Ducks should trade Rickard Rakell, I think there's a high possibility they hold on to him and maybe trade him at the draft after a lot of teams have gone through the expansion draft. They know kind of where they stand, and then they get Rickard Rakell as a little bit of a longer term rental. You know, he's still a rental because he's UFA at the end of the 2021-22 season, but you get him for the entire year plus playoffs, where, you know, yes, you didn't get him for this playoff run, but the value isn't that much lower, right? You know, you missed out on, 20 games plus a playoff run.
He's still on a very nice contract. So even if you get him that year, it's not really going to break the bank. Yeah. You're getting a guy with a high potential and a low cost. So
I think that's what people have to remember too, is like the value, if you're not going to come down from what Bob Murray wants right now, because some teams just aren't willing to pay that because of the looming expansion draft and ton of other reasons this year being just to such a, you know, a difficult season to maneuver, you might get more or the same deal you want at the draft, despite it being a pure rental deal at that point, just because teams have gotten past, you know, the weird season, the cap's going to go up a little bit next year, and you know, you've gotten past the expansion draft and dealt with that, and you don't have to worry about protecting Rickard Rakell. And then now you get him for a full season. So, you know, at the end of the day, if he doesn't get traded at the deadline, you know, people are going to go nuts. You know, I'll probably have my own criticisms to why that deal didn't get done and it should have got done. But if ultimately, if that culminates with Bob Murray trading Rickard Rakell at the draft. I don't think that's the worst thing, especially if you end up getting what you wanted, and that's a top prospect and potentially another first-round pick. Because I still think you can get that at the draft just because of the great contract he's on and the fact that you get him for a full season plus another playoff run. I still think there would be teams who'd be willing to pay that, and maybe more teams would be interested come draft time just because we've gotten past that expansion draft.
Well, I guess you're the minority because most fans I hear online do not subscribe to Time Will Tell. It is what happened today, what happened yesterday, and I'm upset about both things. So I don't care what might happen later. I need to know now.
I think more than anything, people just want to see something change, right? Yeah. In such a bad year, and you know, Dallas Aikens had his warts this year. I think he's kind of, you know, worn thin with a lot of people in terms of their trust with him and what you know, their outlook is on him going forward. And obviously Bob Murray has soured with a lot of people for good reason. Yeah. On some of the decisions he's made this year, but we know both of them are going to make it through the rest of this year. I don't think even if the Ducks go on a 15-game losing streak like the Sabres, we're going to see anybody really get fired at this point. We're too far into the season. So everything hinges right now for a lot of people on a big trade, and that kind of being the big thing that happens this year, because in such a down year, you're just waiting for those big moments that kind of signal change or you know, you could do something.
Yeah, you could tell that when Zegras came in or when Drysdale came in. It's like, yeah, Everyone just perked up. Like, we have something to be happy about. This is amazing. So
there's just something to discuss, right?
Other than another loss, another 1-0 loss, or you know, or 1-goal loss, I should say. So I would say to everybody, it's just, you know, you're going to get through this season. You're going to get through the season with the same GM, the same head coach, pretty much the same players. Maybe there's a trade here or there, and he might get a little happy about the future. But really, just wait for the offseason, because in my opinion, the offseason is GM's gone. The coach that was attached to that GM is gone, and we're looking at a complete shift in management. From that perspective. So I wouldn't hold too much hope out for the rest of this season. Maybe we get a good trade in there, but I mean, ultimately it's not going to make any difference this year. It's all about next year.
Yeah, it really
is. That's
sad,
right? Sorry to be so depressing.
You know, that's the thing is if we get past the trade deadline and no big deals happen, it's going to be a shitstorm on social media. Because people are waiting for something to happen right now. And, you know, something does need to happen. And I think we're at a point where, you know, like I said, it's not going to be a coaching change. It's not going to be a GM fire. Those are like the off-season moves that happen, whether they do or don't at this point. But, you know, we're all kind of hinging now on the trade. Like, the only thing you can do in terms of big, you know, organizational moves outside of a coaching change or firing a GM is a big trade. And when you hear from everybody around the league that the Ducks are active and they're sellers and, you know, everybody's name is on the list, Rickard Rakell, Henrik, Silfverberg, Lindholm could be on there. Like, the fourth period just put out their trade list article, and I think 6 or 7 Ducks players are on that list in terms of, you know, discussions.
Sure,
Getzlaf's
on there, but...
Yeah, in terms of discussions being made around the league, like all these guys kind of being available, maybe not shopped, but at least teams being told that, you know, these guys are available if you're willing to pay the right price. It just drums up the hype, right? And then, you like you said, like, we're Ducks fans are desperate for something. You know, look at how everybody is jumping on this Volkov-Moran trade. If this happens... If you're, you know, the Leafs, or maybe not the Leafs are a good example just because of how volatile that market is. But if, you know, if you're one of the top teams in the league right now, so if you're, you know, I'm sure Lightning fans are jumping on this trade like, oh, my God, you know, something happened. This is a big trade for them. It's just basically an AHL trade. Their team is one of the best in the league. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't affect them at all. And we're sitting here talking about how Alexander Volkov can maybe jump into the lineup and make a difference. Right. Like that's the thing to them. You know, they've had 3 or 4 guys come up this year that could easily just jump right into Volkov's space and they won't even notice he's gone. And I think that's kind of the situation we're at right now as Ducks fans, is that any move is something to kind of talk about and speculate. You know, could this make the team better? Could this change things? What's this mean? What does this signal? Does this mean, you know, the trade dominoes are going to fall and Raquel's out the door tomorrow? Like,
it's kind of sad if you think about it. We're that desperate to try and find some bigger meaning in minuscule trades that aren't really going to affect this team in any way, but we just can't accept the fact that the team is bad. We can't really find a way to fix it. All we can do is maybe make minor tweaks, hopefully a major tweak for next year. Because I think, like, if everyone's dying for that great trade, that big trade, they're going to do it. And if Bob Murray doesn't do like a blowout win trade, all he's going to do is just get blasted for it not being good enough, big enough. And that's what happens when a team is losing, is everyone starts focusing on, all right, well, we've got these assets, we should be getting this, or they overvalue what they think they have. And then, you know, GM makes a move and then everyone just criticizes the hell out of it. And then they get even more depressed about their team and the management. And eventually there's no win situation in my mind for Bob Murray, unless he literally trades Raquel for a first round, another first round, and their top prospect. And maybe that scenario, and even then, there'll still be somebody's like, oh, we could have got more, man. We need new goaltending. Our goalies suck. I mean, they'll just be that guy. They'll be that person. Yeah, or whatever.
There's always that person that nothing will appease them.
I feel like it's a no-win situation. Do the best you can. If you can't get it right now at the trade deadline, don't go over broke because fans are desperate for it. It's like, make the right move at the right time for what it's worth. So yeah. I feel like it's probably not going to happen at the deadline, just because I feel too many teams are too cautious about what's looming in the darkness. So we'll see what happens, but
there's not too many high profile moves that you really feel like could get the type of return that would really get Ducks fans excited. I feel like there's only really two players that could potentially get moved, and really one of them is only the realistic one. But I think Rickard Rakell and Hampus Lindholm are really the only two players I could look at that say could get the type of return that could get you excited. And that's only if the Ducks get the presumably high price they're asking for Rickard Rakell, which has been speculated around the league as a top prospect and a first round pick. I think if you're able to get that and that ends up coming to fruition before the trade deadline, that's a win for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, it depends on the prospect, but if it's a top prospect from a system and a first round pick, that's what you want. That's what you should be getting for Rickard Rakell right now. And if you get it, great. You know, Hampus Lindholm, especially injured, that likely doesn't happen before the trade deadline comes up. It just doesn't seem feasible. But, you know, if you got a big return for that, that's a big deal. But outside of those two, you know, John Gibson isn't getting moved in season. That's just not happening. That's a deal that I can say with 100% certainty would not happen before the trade deadline. If that was ever going to happen, that would be an off-season trade.
You obviously don't understand Ducks fans who have no understanding about goaltending.
You know what? Like, even, you know, ability and merit aside, like, just the deal itself makes no sense to make during the season, especially, again, he's injured right now as well.
He's injured, and then Ryan Miller's gone. I mean, who do you got next season? Stolarz and Lucas Dostal.
And with the expansion draft coming up, I think you literally need John Gibson on the roster to qualify to have enough goaltenders.
You have to protect one.
Available for exposure. You need him. So that's a off-season trade, if anything. So then that takes John Gibson off the table there. And, you know, Ryan Getzlaf isn't getting moved unless he asks for a trade. And that wouldn't be a high profile return. It would just be a high profile trade because of his name. So really, it comes down to Rickard Rakell and Hampus Lindholm, and more so Rickard Rakell. And, you know, even if Josh Manson got moved, which I still think could be a possibility, the type of return you're going to get, I think, for Josh Manson, who's been injured twice this year and hasn't played that great, is not going to be as high as Ducks fans would like. And I would assume any return on him that is below an astronomical value that I think a lot of Ducks fans hold him to would just, it would cause a nightmare.
What would you think? Would you think a third or fourth rounder?
I think you would, you know, the return for Josh Manson right now is because his term's actually pretty decent and the cap hit is not bad. I think if, you know, the return for him right now is probably a second round pick and a B level prospect, which is probably what you get for him right now. And I could tell you, I don't know many Ducks fans that would be happy with that return, despite it being literally probably more than he's worth right now, just because of the injuries and the fact that he hasn't looked that great this year or even last year.
Yeah.
So it does kind of all hinge on Rickard Rakell. Not to put too much pressure on him, but our happiness hinges on Rickard Rakell getting traded or not this year. So we'll see how it goes. We got plenty of time before the deadline, but the last thing I want to get to before we close out the show here is, I believe we brought this up on a previous show, or maybe we just talked about it in our group chat, but the draft lottery changes that are now coming into effect. I believe it was a month ago or so now that they were just proposed changes and there was speculation, and now they've been confirmed. So there's three key changes that are happening to the draft lottery. So teams who would be limited to no more than 2 lottery wins in a 5-year period. So that eliminates the whole Edmonton Oilers thing where they
New Jersey.
Yeah. The Rangers, yeah. I guess.
The Rangers won one. So if they win another one, then they're done for the next 3 years.
Well, they technically won when they jumped from like 13-2 to get Capo Caco. They won a portion of the lottery to get up that high. The Devils lost.
Okay. And the lotto is just the top 5 teams?
Yeah, because I think like you had...
Top 5 teams, I should say.
Originally, you had 3 chances to win the lottery because there was draws for 3rd overall, 2nd overall, and 1st overall. So teams who are near the bottom could jump up and win the lottery, but the highest they could jump up is 3rd. Or in the Rangers' case, the highest they could have jumped up was 2nd to get Capo Caco. Mm-hmm. So that kind of not just covers 1st overall, but lottery wins in general. So now if you win, you know, 2 years in a row, good luck. You can't win the next 3 years. You got to wait 4 years before you can win another lottery, which, you know what, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
It's a deterrent, I guess, to tanking. You know, if the Sabres are prime candidates for 1st overall this year, they can't get it 3 years in a row, basically. And they won it for Rasmus Dahlin a couple of years ago as well. So I think if they won it this year and then won it to get Rasmus Dahlin, they're now out of the running for any foreseeable.
Okay. No, I didn't understand that. I thought it was just somebody who wasn't in the top 5 couldn't win to get into the top 5.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, we'll have to look in and see potentially, because it's just literally in writing says teams would be limited to no more than 2 lottery wins. I don't know if that's contingent on where you finish, because technically, if you finish dead last and you end up getting 1st overall,
you don't automatically get kicked out of the top 5 just because, yeah, hey, we were bad 3 years in a row, so you gotta, you know, get outside
the
top 5.
It depends on what they constitute as a lottery win. Like, is it a win if you're the last place team?
If you get the 1st round pick.
Yeah. So we'll have to see for that. But I do, in general, I like it because it does kind of limit the Oilers situation that everybody. And you know what? It eliminates the rigging. It eliminates the rigging conversation a little bit, right? Just slightly eliminates that where people can't say the NHL are rigging the lottery.
Yeah.
The second was teams are only allowed to jump 10 spots with a lottery win. So they kind of
convenient.
I think they reduced it from 13.
They did 16. It was we had the draft, at least this last year, they had the draft and the one random team that won the overall pick was the Rangers. And it was like eight teams that failed out of the 1st round of the playoffs got to get into that 1 out of 8 lotto, and the Rangers won.
That was,
dude. So I'm just, I don't know.
Likely we'll never see that again because that was largely due to the COVID playoffs that we,
bullshit. Yeah.
So hopefully we'll never see that again. But I do like that it kind of reduces the jump a bit. So we're not seeing a team who finished, you know, just
in a playoff
the lottery, basically just outside a playoff spot, and they jump from 16th to 1st. Like that, or even like 16th to second or anything like that, the fact that you can only jump up 10 spots means like the furthest you could go is
you'd have to be in the bottom third of the NHL.
Yeah, it basically means that if you just missed the playoffs and you finish in that 14, 15, 16, that you can't jump into the top five, which I think is fair. I think that's fair. You know, if you jump from 16th to six, I mean, that's still kind of like, wow, but you're not into the top five, which I think is the important part there. You're not getting a franchise defining player potentially for a team that just barely missed out on the players like the Rangers, who got Alexis Lafreniere because of that. So
yeah, I think it helps just because it prevents tanking, because you don't have any guarantee, but the teams that really kind of need that help just because they're bad can't be punished really hard or be overtaken by a team that is on the upswing, and now all of a sudden they get the number one overall pick, and now they're even more on the upswing, and that team that was supposed to get maybe the number one pick is just even more down the road.
It basically kind of covers them, saying like, you know, a team that is, like you said, on the upswing, just missing the playoffs, isn't gonna leapfrog you and jump, you know, into the second overall pick and bump you down three spots in the process, which is nuts. And then the last part here, and probably maybe my favorite of the three, is the number of picks decided by the lottery is reduced from 3 to 2. So instead of 3 draws for 3rd, 2nd, and 1st overall, it's just a draw for 2nd and 1st overall. Which means that the two worst teams in the league can't pick any worse than 3rd and 4th, respectively. So originally, 1st could fall all the way to 4th, and it was actually better odds that 1st would fall to 4th than they would draft 1st overall. Because the odds of all the teams below them combined winning lotteries and jumping up to 1st, 2nd, and 3rd would mean that 1st could easily drop to 4th. Now, the furthest 1st could fall is 3rd, which I think is a bit more fair. If you get dead last in the league, the worst you can do is still a top 3 pick. I like that a bit better than saying, you know, if you're 1st, you have better odds to fall to 4 than you do to have to draft 1st overall.
Now, do they have better odds to drop to 3rd then?
They still kind of do.
Okay, all right.
But at least the furthest you can fall is 3rd. It's not as bad.
Okay.
Yeah. And then in same sense there, if you're finished 2nd last in the league, the worst you can fall to is 4. So you could the worst you can fall is only 2 spots versus 3 before. So it's not, again, a huge difference, but I think it's a bit more fair to those really, really bad teams, that you can't all of a sudden be the worst team in the league and you're projected 1st overall pick, and you all of a sudden, instead of drafting 1st, you're now drafting 4th, which is in some of the years where there's really only 2 or 3 franchise defining players, you went from having that guy to a guy who, you know, doesn't really make a difference on your roster as early as you expected or in the way you expected. So I'm fine with that. And some of these changes are this year and some of these changes are next year. So this year we'll see the 2 lottery draws. So the number 1 and number 2 draws will be this year. There'll be no lottery draw for 3rd overall. So that change is coming into effect this year. Mm-hmm. However, for this year, there'll still be 16 teams in the lottery. And then beginning in 2022, there'll only be 11 teams in the lottery to make that, to kind of coincide with that rule that you can only jump 10 spots. Yeah. So there'll only be 11 teams in the lottery, which again is another good part of that rule, because it eliminates that 16th, 15th, 14th seeded team to all of a sudden be just in the lottery and jump all the way up. So
yeah,
you really now have to be a struggling team, because I think you could comfortably say usually the 11th worst team in the league is probably about 10 or 12 points out of a playoff spot. Like, they're firmly out of a playoff spot. It's really just those, you know, 13th, 14th, 15th, and 16th seeded teams that are just
maybe went on a losing streak right at the end of the season, and they're on the outside looking in, you know,
and missed out by like 3 or 4 or 5 points. Had a tough end to the season, another team got hot, whatever, and then all of a sudden you're rewarded with a 2nd or 3rd overall pick. So, you know, all in all, I like the changes. I think they're all fair. I think there's merit in behind all of them of why they've been put in place to kind of limit, you know, because the NHL has seen a lot of that, and it's been kind of controversy around the draft lottery lately of teams that are outside the 10 worst teams in the league that have jumped up into spots. Like the Flyers jumped up and got Nolan Patrick second overall. And the Devils jumped up in that same draft and got Nico Hischier. And it might have been the same year. The Dallas Stars jumped up and got Miro Heiskanen, right? And it sent whoever was first overall at that time down to fourth. And it's been, you know, last year with the Rangers jumping up, and when the Rangers jumped up to get Kako, and it seems like every year there was a team way down in the standings that jumped up into a top three pick. And it's just getting, you know, ridiculous at that point that, you know, these teams that are on the upswing and have kind of gotten further on in their rebuild, all of a sudden be like, oh, you're adding this guy. You get a first overall pick.
Yeah, it's an evolving thing. I mean, they went to the draft lottery with, you know, this in mind, and then they start seeing things year after year kind of changing how that goes. And so they kind of go, all right, well, you know, we got to tweak this. Let's tweak it a little bit, Let's get it down, dialed in. And I feel that that's what they're doing. They're tweaking it. They're dialing it in a little bit. They're making it better than what it was. You know, it's not something you just say, well, it didn't work. Just trash it and go back to the old ways. Like, all right, this kind of worked, but it could have been better. Let's tweak it this way and make it better. So it's evolving. And, you know, as more and more of these lotteries happen, you kind of maybe see things that you didn't expect to see happen and you tweak it a little bit more. But I think they're doing a good job, and I think this is a good change or tweak to the system.
If anything, these changes coming in at a perfect time for the Ducks, because right now, I think statistically they're actually the second worst team in the league behind the Sabres, because
we're number one.
Yeah, because we've played 34 games, have 24 points. The Red Wings have played
33. That win percentage. Yeah, that win percentage.
The Red Wings have played 33 and have 24 points, which points percentage-wise, they're higher than us right now. Buffalo is just dead, way dead last. I mean, they could actually get pretty close to us if they were to rattle off three straight wins, but this is a team who has six overall wins on the season. Let's not kid ourselves. The Sabres are not rattling off three straight wins. And even Ottawa has gone on a bit of a winning streak right now. They have a game. The Ducks have a game in hand on them, but even if the Ducks win that game, they're still 1 point behind the Senators. So the Ducks are the second worst team in the league. And if the draft lottery was to be decided today, the Ducks would be one of those benefactors in the sense that they could only fall as far as fourth, being the second worst team in the league, instead of being, you know, potentially falling down to five. So, hey, if we do finish at the bottom two this year, this is the year to do it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, at this point, that's the one thing we can look forward to is being good at. It used to be not having any sort of COVID protocol. We were pretty good there until just recently. So this is our last thing left.
Yeah,
if we suck really bad, we might actually get a good draft pick this year.
Apparition brings up a good point I didn't even bring up this year, being one of the benefits of being the two worst teams in the league is no matter what this year, Seattle gets the third overall pick.
Yeah.
That's just, they get that for being an expansion draft team. So if you finish the third worst team, you actually get the fourth overall pick because of where Seattle is, right? So right now you almost hope that the Ducks are worse than the Red Wings and the Senators at the end of the season. Let's not kid ourselves. Nobody is catching the Sabres. The Sabres will be the worst team.
They're
just in another stratosphere in terms of how bad they are. But
they're
it will
in that
be
seventh level of hell, and just everyone else is playing at maybe the third. Because they're not up there. They're not in the stratosphere. They're way down here. They're in the summer.
Oh, yeah, true. They're on the opposite end there.
Seventh layer of hell.
Yeah, so it will be a battle, I guess, all year between Detroit, Ottawa, and Anaheim in terms of where each of them will finish in the standings. So I never thought I would say this, but we're rooting for the Ducks to finish second last just to get a better odds at a top pick this year. But, it's again, we're saying it's the best year to do it, but it's also the worst year to do it because in terms of bona fide first overall prospects this year, there's like six or seven guys who could go first overall. So the difference potentially in your scouting chart of drafting second, first, or fourth could be meaningless if the guy you end up getting at fourth was the guy you had first on your board anyway, right? There's no McDavid, there's no Matthews, there's no Shane Wright in this year's draft where it's a guy that you need to get. No Alexis Lafreniere, you know, no bona fide first overall. I think if you went and asked 10 different scouts right now, you could potentially get, you know, 7 or 8 different names of who they have at first overall. That's just the way the draft works this year. So we'll see. I mean, you know, we gotta wrap up the show here anyway, because we're pushing a bit late. But you know it's getting down part of the season here when we're talking about the draft.
And what the Ducks we're not even at trade deadline and we're talking about the draft.
You gotta look for the light at the end of the tunnel. So that's what we're doing at this point. But we'll be back, I believe, on Friday after the Ducks play the St. Louis Blues. Should be an interesting
another
game.
Another win, yeah.
Yeah, another notch in the belt against one of the best teams in the NHL. The Blues have been struggling lately, but they just got Vladimir Tarasenko back, which will not be fun for Anaheim to face him. I think the big thing, though, is Lucas Dostal. Maybe he gets his first NHL start. We'll have to see. Backed up tonight for Ryan Miller. And Millsy is going to need a break here at some point. And Stolarz is on the COVID protocol list, so there really is only one option to go to. And maybe that's
me.
Never thought. Right, I'll shoot up. Ryan Miller gets hurt at this point. It's Lucas Dostal is going to get the start. And you're the emergency, the e-buck, the emergency backup goalie. For that game, and if Dostal has a tough start, you might be getting in some action.
So some reps in. All right, cool.
I want to see a Dostal debut, and I don't, because I feel like it's unfair to throw a guy into an NHL debut after he's lost 7 games in a row in the AHL and say, here you go. And it's not the way you would want it either. It's not rewarded for good play. It's because guys are injured and guys are on the COVID protocol list, and you've got a 40-year-old netminder who is tired and you need another guy to step in. It's not the best of situations to hand an NHL debut to a 21-year-old netminder, but we'll see. There's the chances it could be another debut, which would still get people excited, right? We were excited about Zegras' debut, excited about Drysdale's debut. It's as tough of a situation it would be for Dostal. It'd still be fun to see him get that debut, and hopefully it wouldn't be a complete disaster.
I agree. We'll see. I don't think they're going to throw him in yet. I think they'll just they'll ride Ryan Miller because it's his last season. So
yeah. All right. Well, we'll find out on Friday. We'll be back with the show. Stay tuned to Twitter in terms of who will be on that show. It will likely be Stefan because he missed this show.
Stefan.
He'll be back. Trust me. Don't worry. He'll be back. Everybody.
He's a fan favorite to somebody.
Yeah, to somebody out there. He's a fan favorite. But we'll be live after that game. Appreciate everybody who came out for the post game show today. And we'll catch you guys on Friday night. Take care, guys.
Bye, guys.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.